This interview with Bert Haslam was recorded for the Dursingham 2000 History Project on the 13th of November 1997. Please may I have your full name?
Albert Haslam.
And are you normally called Albert?
No, normally Bert.
When did you first come to Dursingham?
First time was in about September 1968, and we actually chose this plot of land where we live now, and we moved in when the bungalow was complete in March 1969.
And you were working then in
Kings Lane at the college?
Right. Could you tell us something about the development of this area of the village, please, before you, from when you first came here?
The village then was quite small, relative to how it is now, with very few estates. Valley Rise was being made as a large estate. And this estate had probably been started about 2 years previously. Other than that, I think that the village itself, this estate in particular, Centre Vale Estate it was called, was actually developed up to halfway up Queen Elizabeth Drive, and the rest of it here had not even been started.
But it was on the plan?
Yes, it was. The plans were there, and we could actually see where we actually live now as a place on a plan, but there were certainly no buildings. And we were able to watch the development throughout the winter as it was being built.
And of course Valley Rise was being built more or less at the same time, wasn't it?
It was indeed. And Valley Rise, they were partway up Valley Rise to, or partway down, whichever way you look at it. We also looked there in case we wanted to go live in that place, but we preferred this. With this spot overlooking the pastures,
yes,
at the back.
Yes, because it's very nice with the pastures. Now the pastures have been there presumably forever.
They've been there for hundreds of years, and the history tells us that it was very much as it is now. There was an old hall at the back, not in our time, but in history, and I'm interested in history. The old hall was in the middle of the pastures here, behind what is now the bowling green, with the moat around it, and the moat is still there.
Now, where does the church fit into that?
The church is directly opposite, and it's just the side of the church hall now.
Right. Right, good. Do any of your other members of your family live in Dursingham?
Yes, they do. Alan, our son, and his family live on Old Hall Estate, which is also a new estate and wasn't here.
Old Hall Estate.
That was a pasture just back here. And our daughter lives in Inglestall, just up the road.
Now, Old Hall Estate is named after the old hall.
That's right.
On the corner, which I can remember being there as a horrible old building when
exactly.
We first came to the village. So do you know anything about that?
Yes, that was built in 1671. And at the same time as two other important buildings. One was West Hall Manor, at the bottom of Manor Road there, and the other building at that time, all built within 1 or 2 years, was the Tithe Barn.
Right, so the Tithe Barn was built at similar time to...
Within 1 year, 1671, Tithe Barn was built, and West Hall Manor. All these buildings were built at the same time.
But all the way round Old Hall would have just been fields.
Oh, it would indeed, yes. Oh, yes, for sure.
And some of the old houses that are like on Sugar Lane and so on must have come a lot later.
They'd come later, yes, indeed. That's right. The main part of the village would have been round Chapel Road, and your Sugar Lane would have, that area there, and would have been nearer to what I think, down to the bottom of Chapel Road, which is near the traffic lights now.
Yes.
There are some old houses there now, cottages, that go back at least 300 years or more, 16th century, 17th century, 1600 and something. So Chapel Road would have been quite an important part of the village in those days.
And then opposite the end of Post Office Road, they are now turning what is an old barn into a building. So,
absolutely right.
Do you know when that was?
No, I don't. But I doubt if it's more than a couple of hundred years old. But I don't truthfully know the date. But your Fernhill and all these developments are additions. They go back a while, but. Yes. I don't think they're ancient in the true sense, you know. They're not medieval or not.
And as I've discussed with several people, we've almost reached the end now of the building on Dursingham, haven't we?
Yes, we have. I hope we have.
Well, there doesn't appear to be any more land available.
That's right. But if I could just take you back on that one a little bit. Since we have come here in 1969, the housing development in this place has increased nearly twofold. There, from the Valley Rise and Centre Vales estate, which were the first main two that were built, you've had your Old Hall estate, your Hanover estate, and the Guinness Trust, which when we came were in fact allotments. There is the Mountbatten estate, which is massive. There is the Kingscroft estate. There is the Saxon Road and Tudor Way, where the doctor's surgery is now.
Yes.
All of these were all pastures at the time, just as this old hall, which was really an old part of Dursing, because it was very close to what had been the main Dursingham Hall, on this pasture at the back of us, as I said, behind the bowling green.
And I often think that developers must look very keenly at the allotments on Station Road.
Yes, indeed. Oh, indeed. Yes, I'm sure.
Because that seems to be a valuable bit of building land,
right.
But I believe it is not touchable.
Yeah. And one up Sandingham Road, which they've got their eyes on as well, which is, I think, is common land, you see, and as the allotments are built on common land, and therefore they belong to the people, in truth.
And so it's kind of managed by a trust, I believe.
Yes, it is, the Dursingham United Charities.
And they would have to give permission for a developer.
Yes, but and there is already land at this stage that is common land that is rented to Sandingham Estate, where people really don't have the use of it.
Yes.
Only in name.
And one wonders about allotments in modern society when people buy all their vegetables frozen and so on. Presumably the allotments are still used.
Yes, by individuals, yes. They certainly are, and they grow the things. But I think it would be fairly easy these days if somebody wanted to rent an allotment. I think the chances of getting one are quite high.
Yes.
Whereas if we went back 40 years, they probably would have to wait until someone died or something.
Because
like
people
that.
Didn't have the big gardens.
That's right.
And so on. Right. Now, what are your earliest memories of the village?
Well, as I say, when we came, there weren't all the estates. But some of the things that come to mind now. There were four petrol stations in this small village when we came. There were also four pubs. These days, we have one petrol station now.
Yes. Where were the other three?
What, the petrol stations?
Yes.
Where Cox's Garage is now.
Yes,
one.
I remember that one.
Heathrow Garage. The first one as you come in, into the left, as you come into the village, as you approach, that was one. And Red Pumps on Chapel Road there.
Of course, yes. So they've all closed while I've been here.
Oh, yes, that's right. So from four, we've now got one. So no choice at all now. It's Hobson's choice.
Do you think the bypass made a difference?
Yes, it did. The bypass, which had been waited for something like 50 years, and was pushed on, that was the most exciting time in this village, I think, really, was when people got exasperated and decided it was time they did something. I think you'd call it people power now.
Yes.
On one Sunday, we all went to walk, and everyone joined in. And we just walked down from the village centre, just down the main road, to the spot where the island is now. And it was a kind of protest, but it was as peaceful and friendly as one could wish. But the message got over to the minister at the time. And in fact, action took place very soon afterwards.
Yes, because it, for people who recently moved into the village and don't know anything about when there wasn't a bypass, have no idea of what it was like, particularly on a Sunday.
Well, my first thoughts on that one are, each Sunday, there would be a queue of traffic through the Sunday, through the village, week in, week out.
Yes.
And if the sun came out, of course, the traffic was twice as long. And we had no traffic light at all in the village then. We used to have a part-time policeman who used to put his white coat on and stand at the corner of Station Road there and Chaffrey Road and direct the traffic. Each week that used to take place.
In the summer particularly.
Oh, in the summer particularly.
It was horrendous.
Oh, yes, it was.
In fact, we were very grateful to the traffic lights when they were put up because coming down Valley Rise, you could at last get out onto the main road.
And it became almost a mockery at the end because they came up with all sorts of reasons why they couldn't make it. But apparently they'd been putting the bypass off since the 1930s. So it had always been talked about. But every time it raised its head, there would be a new type of objection, whether it be money or no need for it. And the last one, of course, was the biggest joke of all, the moth.
Oh, tell us something about the moth.
I don't know a lot about the moth because no one ever sees it. And as someone said yesterday, it's still not turned up. No one mentions it except as a joke now.
Well, I think we killed it off by putting the concrete down.
As someone said yesterday, I think my wife killed them all.
So that was the last objection.
That was the last, and really it was the silliest. But I think the people power little walk through the village down to the side, in fact, swung the issue, and the minister, in fact, acted very soon after.
Yes.
And all these silly objections and money was found, and it went ahead.
And there's no doubt it is a big improvement.
Of course it is.
The whole life in the village is so much easier now.
The people who weren't pushing it, of course, were the traders in the village.
Particularly petrols.
Petrol being one. And, of course, we've seen the difference since.
Yes.
But you can imagine people like taxis and that would be appalled at all the traffic being taken away. In fact, it doesn't seem to have affected them one iota.
No.
They've gone stronger than ever.
Yes.
And they're always a good village shop and always very available.
Yes.
Always open for long hours and 7 days a week. They still are now, more than ever now.
Yes.
In spite of the fact there is a bypass, so everyone is using them.
Yes, and now it's built on its own sort of recognition in the local area.
Yes, indeed. And they were in competition. At the time, we do remember, they were in competition with a shop next door on the same site. Rankins, of course, and it was fierce competition until taxes actually took over the whole thing.
I can remember seeing a notice outside which said, compare our prices.
Indeed. Oh, they used to stand outside and look at each other's prices every morning.
Any other early memories?
Well, I think we had no Roman Catholic Church, of course, in those days either. The doctor's surgery, I remember, was in Bank Road and was such a tiny little place that when you were sitting in what was called the waiting room, your knees were almost touching each other.
That's right, yes.
The person opposite.
because Dr. Fielding, who
that's
I interviewed,
right. Dr.
Duff,
Fielding was there, yes.
He was telling me all about the problems of that particular place.
Was he?
And how he had to jump up from his chair as soon as somebody went out to call the next person
yes,
in.
Yes, indeed. Yes. Oh, it was quite something.
Very
so
primitive.
I suppose that was part of what was a small village and hadn't kept pace with the growing numbers.
Yes.
Village. This village has always been a growing village, and I have populations of this village going back hundreds of years. So it had been growing, and I suppose the fact there was just one doctor hadn't really kept up with the times. And then eventually it was seen that you had to do something. And lo and behold, when the Saxon Way estate was started, they made this lovely new Dursingham surgery. And of course it became a team of doctors instead of just one.
Yes. Have you belonged to any clubs or organisations in the village?
No, other than the church. I've devoted most of my time with our St. Nicholas Church. That's
now, when you say devoted life. Your time, what different things do you do in the church and for the church?
Well, I used to be on the PCC, but I didn't reapply to go on there again. I'm quite happy doing what I do. So I'm on a number of things. The finance side I'm very strongly associated with. So my son's treasurer, but I'm assistant treasurer, so we'll look after that side, and it's quite important. And on the other side, taking a great deal of interest in the history of the church and writing about it, and being a church recorder, and I help with the publication from NADFAS that was is now in the possession of our church. So there's a true recorded. There's a true record, really, of all that is in the church.
Yes.
Both the building and its material content. So everything is in there, and a very useful document that is.
Yes, because there's no doubt vicars come and go all the time.
They do indeed, yes.
And quite often they don't know a great deal about the background of the church that they're.
They aren't all interested in that side, they're interested more in the religious.
Of course.
Which is what their job is, really.
Yes.
So
yes.
It's for other people to be interested in the history and the archaeology and that. But the contents, nevertheless, they need looking after. And people like church wardens have to be very responsible because that is their duty. And they've undertaken that when they sign on as a church warden.
And of course, because it's something you can go on till you're very, very old doing this, can't
indeed you?
You
can, yes.
And as you say, you need to have something written to pass on eventually to the people who are going to be responsible for the church next.
So one or two of the things that highlighted my interest in the church, and it's still there, I'm as interested in it as ever, but it was noticeable to me that we haven't really got a good booklet on the church itself. You go in some churches, and particularly in cathedrals, you can always buy a good booklet that, with photographs of that.
Yes.
In churches, some have and some haven't. And I thought we had a little publication, but it was just a little piece of A4 folded over, you know, and it did give some interesting facts, but I thought it was lacking in quantity. So I set about rewriting a record of that, and eventually I completed it and published it in 1993, and we've given it a slight title of Early History and Church Guide. So I've tried to guide people through the church in all aspects, so I'm quite pleased about that one.
Yes.
Almost at the same time, I was doing something about the village itself, but mainly I wanted to link it up with the church because there's my history and my love. And so I thought the church started in Norman times, our present church. We have dates of vicars going back to 1106. So I thought if I could record something about what has taken part in the Dursingham's history, that I could look up from history. So I put together what is called, we're given it a title, the Dersingham Chronicle.
Yes.
And I tried to take snippets of information that I found that I thought might be of interest, and it proved to be worthwhile. People bought it and there were some nice comments about it.
Very useful. Now, of course, a copy of each of those will be a very useful addition when we put together all the information that we're going to need for the Millennium Collection. So we'll have to make sure you keep us a copy of each of those.
It hasn't stopped there, because I got very interested in the churchyard itself and the people in there, because that also goes back hundreds of years as well. As long as there's been a church, there's been a churchyard. And whilst the churchyard's been extended, there's a lot of history in there about names of families that have lived here. And so I tried to set about, so for years I've been walking and through this churchyard and looking at documents and visiting Norfolk Register Office and Records Office and finding information. And eventually I published a list, which is in the church now, of all the names of people in alphabetical order and date order of everyone we know who is in the church, in the churchyard, sorry. And of course some inside the church itself, but they're all recorded. So the lines of families, such as the Pell family, who were lords of the manor in medieval time, and became mayor of Lynn, and became an MP, and his sarcophagus is in our church now, in the chancel there. Now that family were a main family in Dersingham for 200 years.
That's why we have a Pell Road, presumably.
Right. But the strange thing is, after that period of time, in the early 1700s, a family that had been here and been the main family in the village for all these years suddenly disappeared. There were no followers.
No, and we've got no Pells.
That's right. There were no. There was no continuity, and the Pells just disappeared from this.
Very sad.
There are Pells all over the world these days.
Yes.
Particularly in America.
Who
do visit here.
Yes.
And they're so interested in their ancestors.
Yes. And they're the sort of people who would find this millennium information so useful.
That's right. And we do meet them and send information when they ask them.
Yes. Now, can you remember a worst time in the village?
I can't really. The floods, the main floods in 57, I wasn't here. There was a flood in the late 60s, I think it was about 60, no. Up in 1978, something at that time. But it really didn't really affect us in Dersingham. There were heavy floods, but it did affect them as near as Snetsham.
Yes.
Places like that. There were lots of caravans and that badly damaged. But from a bad time, no, there really isn't one really bad time.
And you've already said it. I mean, the biggest changes you've seen, now you mentioned the petrol stations and the buildings, I suppose really they are the biggest changes, aren't they?
Yes, and one we do recollect very soon after we came here was the one. We must remember there was a railway always run from Leamington and Stanton. And
that must have been there. Running.
Oh, that was running when we were here, when we first came. And when it was announced that the train was finishing after Dr. Meeching had been around, Wynne and I went down one Saturday evening to actually witness this actual last train going through Dersingham. And I do remember it had a wreath on the front as well, and
very sad.
It was. It was a sad moment, really, yes. Because it was the end of an era that had been quite important. And people these days wish it was back now, and I'm sure there is a use for it.
Well, certainly it was used, I know, by the children who were going into King's Lynn, because there were the two grammar schools.
So the grammar schools down, they used to go on that, yes.
Yes. And I remember holidaymakers used to come in
right.
into King's Lynn and come along to Hans Stanton. Right. So I think to start with, it must have made quite a difference to Hans Stanton as a seaside resort.
It certainly changed Hans Stanton because the station disappeared soon afterwards, you see,
yes.
didn't it? They were able to redesign Hans Stanton. So if they wanted to go out there now, they couldn't put the station where it is,
no.
where it was.
And of course, in those days, the coach companies that now operate most of the holiday travel
That's right.
weren't franchised and so on to do
Not
that,
right.
were
no,
they?
No, no.
So there must have been a few years when it was very difficult, unless you had a car of your own, to get to Hans Stanton.
Yes, I think it was. Well, Hans Stanton is on the map. Tucked away, isn't it?
Yes. Right?
It's kind of, if you're looking on the map, it's tucked away up the far side of the Wash. And many, many people have come through what they think is Norfolk, because they've come down from Lincolnshire or wherever, and they've come through King's Lynn, but then headed south down the A10 or whatever. And they never see this part of Norfolk.
And they are missing a real treat,
oh, they really are. They miss this wonderful coastline around Hunstanton and Brancaster and
Yes.
for them, all these places, they miss them. All of the people who head for them find them.
Yes. Now, what would you like to see happen to the village in the future?
First and foremost, I'd like the main building to stop after the Mount Batten has been completed. This is an extensive estate. It's going to take the village over to the bypass, to the
yes.
new bypass. It is so large, taking a lot of land up, and Gellam Hall, one of the main manors in the village in the medieval times, it's approaching that site now. I trust they don't build on it. That would be almost criminal. Because the site is there, it's marked on old maps as well, so people do know where it is. I would like the village to stop growing as estate after estate, and remain a village.
Yes.
A large village it will be, but nevertheless it's a lovely village as Dirtham, and I'd like it to remain a village.
Well, certainly I have discussed this with several people, and we've thought about where any other building could be done, and there isn't anywhere else. Apart from the pastures, which I think would be...
Yes, it'd be criminal.
Yes, I don't think they'd ever be able to build on there.
No, but we thought the same about... That was royal land, where the Hanover Estate is now.
Yes.
Was royal land.
Yes.
And it was allotments for people.
Well, at the top of Valley Rise, when we first moved in, and there was only Valley Rise Road there, we were told that they would never build across the road from
right.
us
yes.
because it was royal land. And of course now, as you see, there's a large development.
The same here, all the whole estate, they built the Centervale estate and completed there. The old Hall estate was purely woods here. It was beautiful. Rabbits used to run across here, and it was gorgeous to take children and let them see nature. And the lady who owned the land declared that it would never be built in her lifetime. I'm afraid that didn't seem to hold much water once money started being offered, because in quick time it was turned over. And in fact, whilst they were digging that land, it was an important site, they found Roman coins buried in there, in treasure in there. I remember the digger driver digging the footpaths or whatever, no, roads at that time for the estate, and he come across this site with all the corns.
Fame. Now, presumably, will you retire in Dirtingham?
No, we are retired and have been retired.
And I assume you're intending to be buried in the village.
I would imagine so.
Yes.
Yes.
Now, this question that people find rather difficult, what does the millennium mean to you?
Well, I don't know that. Because I've been involved in this millennium project from St. Nicholas Church, I've looked at it more from a religious side than anything
yes.
else, and it's lovely to think that the world has been going, I don't know how many years the world has been going, but from a date point of view, all we ever talk about is 1997 now, and we're talking about the year 2000. We know that's only a very small part of the lifetime of this world. So really, what are we really talking about? We're talking back to the time Jesus was here. And so it's a religious connection.
Yes,
that's my feeling.
Yes.
That it's wonderful that somebody who lived here 2,000 years ago, we are actually celebrating the year 2000 since his birth here. And I think that's wonderful.
It is.
What I would like to see is that continue forevermore.
Yes, as being a reminder of when Jesus was born.
Yes, and Tom, our vicar, has been the one who came up with this idea for this Millennium Project, where we've called it a 1,000 to 1, and people are putting a corner day into the boxes.
Yes.
But the whole idea is that it's tied up with the religious side, and not with expecting something free out of a lottery, and it completely changes the whole aspect, and I'm all for this one.
And of course, unfortunately, an awful lot of people will reach the millennium without having any thoughts about the religious significance of it.
That's right.
They will just see it as a date.
Well, we had a friend here just the other week, dear friend from Australia, and she was quite captivated by this millennium appeal that we're doing, because she said in Sydney, in Australia, all they can talk about is the year 2000, because the Olympics are being held in Sydney. And the only thing significant to them about the year 2000 is the 2000 and the word Olympics.
Yes.
It's the Olympics will be here.
Yes.
So there's no talk the other way about this religious significance.
No.
So I'm glad we've passed the message on this. I know at least three churches that are thinking, well, one is already doing the appeal similar to we are. So they've copied us, and with our consent as well.
Yes.
And two others are now looking into that, so I'm delighted about that.
Yes.
Let's spread the news.
Now, I know you have photographs and cuttings and things because of your historical interest in this.
That's right.
I have no doubt that when the time comes, you'll be able to let us borrow copies of things that you put, as well as the copies of these magazines that you've done. And you'll be quite happy, will you, to let us borrow stuff?
I'll do what I can.
Thank you. Have you anything further to add to what we've discussed?
No, I think we've said all this.
It's certainly been extremely interesting, because I think your historical knowledge and all the research you've done has meant that you've got a lot of information that perhaps other people didn't know anything about.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.